Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Mraz. Today's show was unlimited, with great moments, laughs, and good takes. Here is the best of today's show.
The Bucks were coming off that emotional Game 7 victory over the Brooklyn Nets, an opportunity for the Bucks to finally slay their dragons. Giannis, Middleton, and the rest of this crew had a pathway to their first NBA Finals and the Bucks' first NBA Finals in 71, staring at them only a 5 seed, a fellow team that had not been this far before, the Hawks. And the Bucks, of course, with home court advantage. How often does a 3 seed get home court in the Eastern Conference Finals? The answer, not often. So last night was Game 1 in their house, Fiserv Forum. But the bad news was they couldn't control nor contain Trae Young, who absolutely exploded. And in doing so, on a nearly 50-point night, humiliated the Milwaukee Bucks. How the hell did the Bucks just get torched in Game 1? And how will they possibly slow down Trae Young in ensuing games? It is where we begin. Your cold open.
Trae now driving. Trae in the lane. Throws up the right hander. It's good, and he got fouled on the play. Count that basket for Trae Young and a chance at a 3-point play. Oh, my goodness, Trae. That's 41 points for Trae Young. He has the it factor, folks.
Sometimes going against somebody like Trae, who's a bit lighter, who initiates the contact and gets those calls, it's hard to guard. You know what I mean? But I got 6 fouls. I got to play smarter. I think I can be more aggressive. I think I started being more aggressive in the second half where maybe trying to speed him up a little bit and kind of get him out of his comfort zone.
So now Holiday's got to put it in play. He looks to get it in. Still looking. And he gets it in. Middleton fires the three, and he misses the three. Rebound loose, and the Hawks have it, and the Atlanta Hawks have done it again, folks. These gutty, gritty, young Atlanta Hawks have come into another building and win the first game of the series to gain home court advantage. How about these Atlanta Hawks, folks? They are unbelievable.
We've been very focused and very locked in when it comes to preparing for our opponent, and we know We didn't get a high seed, so we got to try to steal one on the road. And Game 1 is definitely a game that you can really surprise that team. And I think with the way we've been playing coming out of the gate, you can just tell we're really focused on our attention to details when it comes to that team.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
Trae Young after his phenomenal Game 1, Drew Holiday on how to answer the bell for Young. Trae Young, 48 points last night, 11 assists, 7 rebounds. And Young, with the ultimate embarrassment for Milwaukee, stepping to the 3-point arc late in the third quarter, and with so much space and so much time, could sit there, square up, and do a shoulder shimmy shake before draining a 3. Trae also drove to the basket and threw a lob off glass that John Collins slammed down, and Young just torched the Bucks. The first part of this is this transformation of Trae Young is awesome. Is awesome. Young completely embraced being the villain in this first series against the Knicks. Completely embraced being the villain in the second series against the Sixers. And then last night did it again. And the Hawks, this is not a coincidence, won game one on the road for the third time this postseason. So they have put their stamp on these series and forced the higher seed, the better team, to chase right from the jump. Young and his evolution into playoff game killer, playoff game assassin, road venue villain has been awesome. We need characters like this. We need fearlessness like this. It is the theatrics that you can't turn away from. And Trae Young went from a guy that you probably didn't ever have to watch, say, boy, I've got to watch Trae Young tonight on TNT, to a guy that you've been watching now for a month and a half torch good team to the playoffs and will now have a household kind of attention of most basketball fans saying, I got to watch what Trae Young's going to do tonight. That's been great. Number two, I love guys that look at the playoffs as their stage. I love guys that look at this is my time to shine. They don't shrink from the moment like Ben Simmons, but instead say, I am only going to bring my best self and get it better every single night. They are embracing the challenge. The Hawks are, and specifically Trae Young is. Let's talk about Nate McMillan and the type of team he has built, which is we're swinging at you. We're not waiting for you to counterpunch. We're taking the fight to you. They have now stunned three higher seeds in a game one to open up the series. And the Bucks are just the latest team to be scrambling after the first game. And that's Nate McMillan, let me tell you. And then number four, going forward, the Bucks better figure this thing out and figure this thing out quick. Because last night, not only could they not defend Trae Young, no matter who they put on him, the Bucks went small in the fourth quarter of last night's game. And that slowed down Trae, didn't completely shut him down, but slowed him down. But if you do that, guys like Clint Capella are going to eat you up underneath, and that's exactly what happened with offensive rebounds. So the Bucks are going to have to figure this thing out and figure it out quickly. The TNT guys last night were absolutely all over the argument and debate and one another over whether this is about pick and rolls and screens up top and what do you do. But at the end of the day, this is a lot about effort. Because when you watch Bobby Portis sink down low and not collapse up top, and when you watch nobody else run to Trae Young, who is wide open around the three-point arc, and he is sitting there so long he's getting bored and then shimmy shakes with a shoulder to then drain the three, it's a thumb in your eye and a humiliation. There has got to be a level of pride there. And you saw after that shot, Giannis imploring his teammates that this can't happen. We're getting embarrassed here. And they were. So Budenholzer and the Bucks have to rework their game plan and their defense, their effort level. But I have to say, I don't know if they have the defenders to do this. I don't know. I mean, Drew Holiday's supposed to be that guy, and he wasn't that guy last night. And if you try to put Giannis on Trae Young, Giannis is not going to be able to keep up with him. Yeah, he's going to be able to put an arm up and get in his shooting lanes, but Trae Young's going to dribble right around him. And Trae's also creating baskets with assists as well, so you are not able to stop him from a shooting standpoint, nor from a playmaking standpoint to set other people up. I don't think the Bucks have the talent right now to be able to defend Trae Young. They've got to hope that Trae just shoots poorly, that it's just a poor shooting night, and that they use Giannis to destroy down low and get that advantage. Because frankly, if you're just kind of thinking that, oh, well, the Bucks will figure out the defensive side of this, I don't know that they will with Trae Young, because Giannis had 34 and 12 and they still lost last night. Jrue Holiday had 33 and 10. They still lost last night. Ooh, this Hawks team. You don't want them. 855-212-4CBS on Twitter, DA on CBS. And to just give you some historic context on this, that was the first time the Hawks, since they moved to Atlanta from St. Louis, the first time the Atlanta Hawks had won a conference finals game. Mraz, what's the solution for the deer to slow down Ice Trae?
Well, the first solution is Chris Middleton just missed another shot. He can't be 0 for 9 from three-point range and clanking everything he shoots, because let's face it, Giannis, not a great shooter, drives to the lane. That's where he gets his points. Jrue Holiday there mainly for defense, also not necessarily a great shooter. It's Chris Middleton who's got to hit down shots to be able to keep up with the Trae Young explosion, if he is going to have that explosion. And honestly, I think he hit the nail on the head. It's the talent, it's the players, the type of defensive players they have. P.J. Tucker is their defensive specialist. He is not quick enough to keep up with Trae Young, so that's going to fall on Jrue Holiday, who had absolutely no answer. But it might have to be the old Belichick versus the Bills in the Super Bowl, in Super Bowl 25. Do you just let Trae Young get what he's going to get and make sure that John Collins doesn't kill you with another double-double? This feels like, in many ways, as you point out, a mismatched nightmare for the Milwaukee Bucks. And leave it to Mike Budenholzer, who has no idea what he's doing using timeouts down the stretch and no idea what he's doing with adjustments. This seems like a very ominous Milwaukee Bucks start to a series. And how Milwaukee would this be to slay the Heat and Jimmy Butler after last year, slay the big bad Brooklyn Nets, and then fall short versus Trae Young and the Hawks on the way to an NBA final?
How about that? That this feels like the Bucks had the entire path to the NBA finals and maybe championship open up for them. As the Sixers are defeated, they now have home court advantage in the Eastern Conference Finals despite only being the 3 seed, and have a Hawks team that's never been this far, obviously, and yet losing game one, it's got to be demoralizing for the Bucks to know that they now have to chase the rest of the series, or at least until they win a pair of games.
Yeah, especially because this postseason specifically, where the Bucks thrived, was at home. It took them until game seven in Brooklyn in the previous round to finally win a road game. For them, it was all about home cooking, and that was the excuse last year they gave, that things were just different in the bubble. They're better in their home confines, and here is Atlanta punching them right in the mouth to start game one at Pfizer Forum.
What a start for the Atlanta Hawks, and away we go in the Eastern Conference.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
And remember, boys and girls, you can listen to the DA show on your phone. Stream us by using the CBS Sports app or the Odyssey app. Both of those apps are free and have a very smooth stream of the mothership mornings, 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific. You could also listen to us on your phone by watching us at watchda.com. That is mobile friendly. The DA show to the palm of your hands for sound check this morning here on the program. We begin with a controversy that continues to embrace and swallow Major League Baseball whole. The crackdown of the illegal substances on pitchers. We had Joe Girardi, manager of the Phillies, call for a check of Max Scherzer, ace of the Nats, the other night. This enraged Max Scherzer. This enraged the Washington Nationals. And here is Dave Dombrowski, the GM of the Phillies, defending Girardi for calling for that search.
Joe Girardi is the furthest from a con man that would, that of anybody that I know.
He's a very sincere individual. He was within his rights. And in fact, I'll tell you, I've called the commissioner's office. If the umpires think you are playing gamesmanship, that they will, can refuse to go out to the mound and check the pitcher. And they can also suspend you. That's part of the rule. And they already had talked to the umpires. The umpires felt that it was completely legitimate because they saw the same thing that Joe saw, him going to his hair like that.
Now that's the baseball equivalent of listening to basketballs dribbling in the back, the background of sound effects. When you have the manager or the GM being interviewed pregame on the field, and you can hear the music being played inside an empty stadium, rattling through the stadium in the ballpark as you interview him. So Dave Dombrowski, technically president of baseball operations for the Phillies, saying, I know Joe Girardi and he's no con man. He's allowed to do that. Baseball is eating itself every day. Every day there's a new war within the game. And this last week has been thoroughly embarrassing for baseball. I mean, Scherzer's basically taking off his jersey to show him and throwing the cap down to the ground. I've got nothing here. You've got pitchers, as we talked about yesterday, dropping trow, dropping their pants on the field, just pulling everything out. Look, I got nothing. And it's showing up. The rules, it's showing up the umps, it's showing up the opponent. It's just all the height of absurdity. Now, I think that this thing is all going to calm down in a couple of weeks. I think just right now, tempers are hot. But it's just baseball continues to look like a clown show because they keep fighting with one another over everything. It's the Hatfields and the McCoys. Every single day, every single week, there's something else in baseball. And to me, that just makes the sport look like it's not properly led. And maybe this is just what happens after decades of mistrust on both sides, where the players hate the owners hate the players, the two just have been battling tooth and nail for many decades. Then you ultimately put a commissioner in there that is supposed to be one to kind of propel the game forward, but he is very sloppy or clumsy in trying to do so. And so you just have these warring factions and everybody's trying to embarrass the other parties. And it's just, I think, really bad for baseball in general. Here is Scottie Pippen, who told Yahoo Sports that things like Steve Kerr, statements like Steve Kerr saying that Kevin Durant is more talented than Michael Jordan is misguided, because when you compare Kevin Durant to guys like Jordan or even LeBron James, he's got a long way to go.
Surpassing LeBron James takes a little bit more than an individual's effort. LeBron James is a complete team player who understands team and winning. Has KD gotten to that level yet? He went home.
He's got two championships and two finals MVPs, right?
But to say that he's surpassed LeBron, I think he still has some learning to do in terms of what it takes to will a team to victory. And give Brooklyn a lot of credit. They lost Kyrie. James Harden probably was, less than 50%. It just wasn't, seeing the same player, but still it was a heck of a series and very enjoyable.
Kevin Durant, awesome. Kevin Durant is a historically great scorer. And Kevin Durant has two rings and was the NBA Finals in both. But don't compare Kevin Durant to Michael Jordan, and don't compare Kevin Durant to LeBron James, because those two guys are just a superior basketball player. And I get that Steve Kerr was kind of saying that the talent, the skill set that Kevin Durant brings to the table is higher than what Michael did. But I even think that that's kind of ridiculous, because what does that say? I mean, Kevin Durant is great and he's got his place in history, but we don't need to compare him to perhaps the two greatest players ever. Those two guys are that far ahead of everybody else. That includes KD. And KD had a really good postseason. And KD's Game 5 was one for the ages. And KD earned a lot of respect. But we don't have to then zoom him up to LeBron and Michael levels for one or two playoff series. Finally, the Hawks last night get a game number one victory on the road in Milwaukee. And for the last 2 months, 3 months, I've been all over how good Nate McMillan has been as a hire for the Atlanta Hawks. But if we go back into the archives, back in March when the Hawks fired Lloyd Pierce, you hear a different tone on yours truly. I'd probably rather have this one back. Was this really a good enough Hawks team to expect much more than what we're getting right now? It's Trae Young, who chucks up a million shots a game. And what? We're asking that team to be that much better than 14-20? And we're demanding that much more out of Lloyd Pierce? Out of that roster? Trae Young, Clint Capella, Danilo Gallinari, and you're supposed to be that much better than this? I got a feeling that Nate McMillan, we're not going to sit there and say, oh boy, that was the missing piece of the Hawks. Somebody ring Freezing Cold Takes right now and serve them this on a platter. Perhaps my worst take ever. It's certainly the conversation. If we are talking about the Mount Rushmore of worst takes ever, I think that that might qualify. Because they fired Lloyd Pierce, brought Nate McMillan in, and he was the missing piece for everything. They went from 14-20 to the Eastern Conference Finals. And it wasn't clearly a roster that was far superior to 14-20. So I'm going to conjure up, channel one of our favorite drops here on the show. My bad. That was my bad. I had the score wrong.
My bad, my friend. I'm sorry.
I am so sorry, my friends.
I got the scores right. I got the winner wrong. My bad, my friend. I'm sorry.
I got the names of the coaches right. I got the franchise right. But I got the actual take very wrong.
My bad.
That is your sound check. Now, this is where the worm turns. Because we have enlisted the help of a young man named Aiden at Marquette. Now, he is a rising senior, so he'll be a senior in the fall at Marquette. And he is a longtime listener of the show. And he has done some stuff just as a fan that we found hysterical. And so he wants some experience in the industry. And we said, well, hop to it. Hop to it, young buck. Let's do it. And so he's now contributing more and more behind the scenes for us. And I've coined him the Marquette Marvel, because what can't he do? But he also, there's two sides to every sword, and both can cut. Because as much as he is helping us, he is also hurting us. He was the one that went into the archives and found that clip. And Mraz, that would be the job of an executive producer. But why not let the Marquette Marvel do your dirty work? Because now perfectly, you don't have to be the villain here for me. I don't have to lash out at you. You don't have to worry about me saying, oh, of course you found that clip. You can hide behind Aiden's work and then laugh at my gloriously incorrect takes and still be my ally. Kind of a perfect world for you.
It is a perfect world, though I will tell you I did find the exact hour to send him in which you said it. However, this is where I saved myself. I said, if I have any of those same wrong takes, or if I have an opposite take, just cut me out of it. We're just going to leave DA out to dry on this.
If you agreed with my take at the time.
Right, exactly. Or right, and I said, and probably even worse for me would be if I disagreed with him, because the DA would really shred me for it. So just cut me out of this entirely, and let's just leave DA up there on the pedestal to fry a little bit.
So whose idea was it to dig back into the archives and find my wrong take?
It was mine, but I felt like...
It was!
It was mine.
It was your brainstorm?
Yeah, I have the email chain. It was mine. You okay. Said you wanted Aiden cutting more audio. That's okay. DA wants Aiden cutting more audio. I remember this conversation.
Oh.
So I went back to the date that he was fired, and I just searched our show, and I found it blatantly right there as one of our headlines of the day. I said, Aiden, see what you could do with this 20-minute chunk. Can you get it down to a good 30 seconds of DA's best stuff here? And that's where we went from.
Oh, that's smart. That's smart.
Hey, you want the kid cutting audio. There's your audio.
No doubt. No doubt. I can't ask for Aiden to do more and then get angry when he does more just because it makes me look like a complete and utter fool.
And this is where it's really maniacal. I've been sitting on that cut by Aiden for at least 2 weeks now. I wanted to find the right spot to put it, and I figured, you know what? Game one, win in the Eastern Conference Final. Now's the time to drop the hammer.
Well, you almost waited too long, because what happens if they would have lost Game 7 in Philadelphia?
You're absolutely right. I probably miscalculated a little bit towards the bird flu portion of my problems last week, but I knew Game 1 Eastern Conference Final, now's the time to resurrect it and drop it out there for everybody.
Now, this isn't going to be one of those Mraz stories that's completely different from the way the other party tells it. Like, Aiden's going to be like, that's not how it happened at all.
Absolutely not. I have a paper trail, too, of emails with him. Absolutely not. Okay. Got to keep a paper trail, DA. Got to keep a paper trail.
Okay. All right, so Mraz, I'm sure you've seen this story that Robert Griffin III, even though he's still in the NFL, has had interviews with multiple media outlets about being a commentator for the NFL and has blown, quote, people away. You've seen these stories, right?
I have absolutely seen these stories, which I guess made me very interested in what RG3 has to say football-wise.
Well, so RG3 was, I believe, a valedictorian. He was in high school. He was an incredible student at Baylor. He obviously won the Heisman as well. And he is, you know, one of those transcendent college football players and celebrities of his time. It feels like a million years ago, but RG3 at Baylor was must-watch television. So from a college football standpoint, plenty of cred. From a intelligence standpoint, he certainly got it. I believe his parents were military parents as well, so he grew up in a pretty disciplined household. So, you know, there's a lot of perspective that I think that RG3 could provide behind a microphone. Now, his NFL career has clearly been much less than we all would have expected. Year number one, as a rookie, he was next level, rookie of the year. His knee gets shredded, and then everything else is kind of downhill from there. And since his knee got shredded, kind of became a punchline. I mean, let's face it, feuding with Mike Shanahan and everybody within Washington, his aborted comebacks, his somewhat questionable head-scratching quotes at times to media as a backup QB has kind of led to him being an NFL punchline. But from a college football standpoint, I totally get why you'd want him to be around your game broadcast. He brings a celebrity and a context. So he's right now, I mean, he's just in like this beautiful honeymoon phase of being lauded around the sports media as he just crushed the interview with Fox. He just crushed the interview with ESPN. He is right now being talked about as the next big former athlete or former quarterback or NFL player or football player in the realm of commentator. He just absolutely nailed the interviews. And you're like, oh, okay. I guess that this RG3 next phase of his career after he retires is going to be a successful one. And right in the middle of this, yesterday afternoon, he posts a video on Twitter of, I guess, his wife. I wouldn't know because she's turned around. You're looking at her back, and she's doing, like, shoulder lifts. So she has a long bar over her both of her shoulders, and she's in spandex, and she is dipping down and doing squats with this shoulder bar above her. And he is also working out in a video in set. He's doing bicep curls. So the two of them are working out on this 6-second clip. She's squatting, and you're looking at it from behind. He's doing bicep curls. Okay. Plenty of people post this type of stuff all day long. Workout videos, Instagram videos about working out. That's a huge, huge part of the genre. But the caption leaves everybody wondering, what do you mean? The caption to this video is, come on, bro, your wife is white. Wait, what? Again, it's RG3 curling, and his, I guess it's his wife, because it's from behind, doing squats. And so this leads to everybody asking, what do you mean by that caption? What is this video even about? Why is there just 6 seconds of your wife doing squats? And finally, he responds yesterday to somebody who simply asks, yo, what the bleep does this mean? And RG3 responds, being white don't mean you ain't got no cheeks. So I guess what RG3 was attempting to do was put his wife's buns on display and, I guess, defend the honor of white buns everywhere. Which, this is the freedom fighter we all needed, I think. Oh, Merez, your laugh is now just, it is brutal. You can't laugh.
I know, I'm trying. This is so hard not to get through laughing like this.
Oh. You can't laugh because you don't have a laugh left.
I know. I got no laugh to give. And I'm looking at Mr. Cheeks up on the screen.
That is the title. That is the caption of this video, of this segment. And right now, Cap is running this video. So here is RG3. He's getting all of this love for being a great commentator and now a future in sports media. And the first thing he does is tweet a video of his wife working out and saying basically she might be white, but she's got a great ass. I mean, RG3, just take the L on this. Like, stay silent. No talkie. Don't have to post it. It's okay. The one thing you don't want to do right now is remind potential employers, oh, yeah, and he's a wild card on social media. Oh, right, if we hire him to do game broadcasts, he might just tweet out pictures of his wife's butt as she does squats. Eh, you know what? Let's find somebody else. And let's go to the other backup quarterback that we could potentially sign. Like, why would you do this now? Why, of all the times, why right now? He's 48 hours removed from glowing reports across the media about how good he is.
This is as incredible a turn as one could have after acing an interview. And I guess, first of all, the best part to me is he has the same copy and paste statement to everybody questioning him. Like, there were like 15 people in the media that, what does this mean? And he keeps saying the same thing. Just because you white doesn't mean you ain't got no cheeks. So, like, he didn't even change the wording on his official statement on what he meant, which is just classic. Number two, I mean, I guess you want to look at the flip side and say, hey, that's the kind of guy we want. He's a loving husband who loves his wife that much that he's bragging about her cheeks. I think there's a positive turn to be had from that.
I guess, but, okay, if he's not interviewing for media positions...
And boy, Cap is all in on running this video, by the way. I mean,
my bucket bin.
These cheeks are basically raising up in a DA's face on watchda.com.
Well, let's face it, the Twitch audience right now is loving this video.
And that's, no question.
And that's, Cap is a slave to the audience.
But
RG3, you can be a loving husband and defend your wife and say she looks great without running bizarre video of her bouncing on her butt doing squats. And then in that weird, some uppercase, some lowercase caption like you do with SpongeBob SquarePants memes.
But
basically saying that white girls can have a big butt too. RG3, just stay quiet.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You were doing so well. And now employers everywhere are like, hey, you know what? I don't think we need RG3. I think we're good here.
The sizzle of the best goals.
Sing us a song. You're the overtime ending man.
The saltiness of the best games.
God, we're having a good time.
We crave the nightly action of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
That's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad? He's a good guy.
It's your morning serving of Canadian bacon. Only on the DA Show.
I feel alive!
A game six with the Islanders one loss away from elimination last night at Nassau Coliseum. Mraz is hoping for an Islanders loss to eliminate New York and to allow him to once again gloat. However, the Isles had something else in mind. Mraz, take it away.
All right, DA. The Lightning were looking to advance to their second straight Stanley Cup final on Wednesday night and had an ominous start to Game 6 when their leading scorer, Nikita Kucherov, was cross-checked by Scott Mayfield on the first shift of the game. He left injured and did not return. Tampa would pretend nothing was wrong, jumping out to a 2-0 lead midway through the second period. Tensions got hot, DA. The pressure was mounting on the New York Islanders to give Peter Schwartz his free tickets money's worth. Jordan Eberle would cut the lead to 2-1. Then, in the third period, Scott, not Baker Mayfield, would strike the Iceman pose.
Held in by Pelech, left point for Barzal. Cutting to the high slot. Finds Mayfield going to the net. Shoot! He scores! Scotty Mayfield roasted! And the Islanders have tied the game at 2 with under 9 minutes remaining in regulation!
Scotty does know. The goal tied the game and set up an insane final 5 minutes of regulation that included a clinic of a penalty kill by the Islanders. We went to overtime, where it wouldn't take long for Anthony to coal fire one into the oven.
Letty wrists it in around the wall on the Tampa end, far side to near. Lightning reverse it, near side to far, but give it away. Bailey couldn't hold his own. Turnover in tight. Quick shot. He scores!
That was Chris King passing away on the Islanders radio network. Anthony Beauvillier, sing us a song. You're the overtime ending man. 68 seconds into the extra period, forcing a winner-take-all Game 7 back in Tampa Bay on Friday night. After the game, Bo knows he wanted to send the Islander fans home happy.
Message was simple. Just stick with what we do best. Just, you know, a hardworking team that, you know, resilient, and we found a way to win, which is huge for us. And I can't believe the building right now. It's crazy. So everyone's happy, and I get to go to Tampa for Game 7.
That courtesy of NBC Sports Network. If the Lightning win a Game 7, Beauvillier's goal will be the last memory of the Islanders playing in Nassau Coliseum with their new building that may or may not smell like horse manure ready to open at Belmont Racetrack, home of the Belmont Stakes. Game 7 Friday night, and that is your Canadian bacon.
Oink, oink. Oink, oink. Oink, oink. Oink, oink.
All right, time oink, now oink. For America's Got Bacon, where we grade out the puns. Anthony, coal-fired one to the oven. Mraz, that is a top three pun that you've ever had on Canadian bacon.
Thank you. I always love when we start with the positive before I get assaulted, so I appreciate that very much.
It was smart. It was sharp. It was a good pun. You didn't overwork it, over-engineer it. I thought it was really, really good. Bogues, I think that's some of his best work this postseason.
Yeah, Dan Marino's very proud of that mention. My only question would be, is that national enough of a pizza chain that everyone in the audience got? It's not Domino's, not Pizza Hut. I got it. You got it. I saw one the other day, but does everyone know what that is? But otherwise, it worked out perfectly.
Okay. It's fair. I always am a supporter of a Schwartz joke, so making fun of Schwartz's free tickets, getting your money's worth of Schwartz's free tickets, always going to get a chuckle out of me. What'd you think about that, Bogues?
Yeah, like that one too. Nice and quick. It was tricky word-wise, but you handled that well as well.
Thank you.
I also like the very kind of understated Scotty does know. That's a reference to Scotty doesn't know, which is a great movie scene. I really like that. Again, it was understated. You didn't build it up into something that it wasn't. Bogues, I was a fan of that.
Yeah, so far so good. Short and sweet on all of these things. No nine-paragraph lead-in that's taking us in four different directions. Right to the point, and they're so far so good.
The Coochie Coochie Kucherov, I'm not crazy about. I thought it was a little too much of a stretch, a little too wacky. I didn't love it, Bogues.
Yeah, but all things considered, who cares? I mean, so he's rolling along here. That would be nitpicking. I didn't love it either, but it was fine.
Can I ask you something? If I would have went with a La Femme Nikita, would you have gotten the reference?
Great.
No, I don't. I don't think I would have.
So La Femme Nikita was a show that used to be a lead-in to Monday Night Raw in the 90s on USA or whatever channel it was.
Yes.
And I was thinking about using that all night last night when Kucherov got hurt. And I said, you know what? I think that's going to fall on deaf ears. So I'm going to throw it back and get goofy with the Coochie Coochie Coo.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I would have picked up on that, but that would have been very clever. What does the Mayfield Iceman pose mean? I know that you tweeted about this as well. What am I missing here?
The Heisman pose, the Iceman pose, Baker Mayfield, Scotty Mayfield.
Oh, God.
I got this one. I liked it.
Heisman doesn't rhyme with Iceman.
Close enough.
Thank you,
what is an Iceman?
Nothing. It's a hockey player on ice.
Yeah,
well, why do you like this then, Bogues, if it doesn't really rhyme and it's not a thing?
Because it's close enough. That's not to be a perfect rhyme, but it was good enough to me. And so, because at first I didn't like not Baker Mayfield on its own, but the payoff was the Iceman pose. I got it right away. I thought that was good. I like that one.
The Iceman pose, Mraz?
Yeah, and by the way, I workshopped it on Twitter last night. It got some minimal reaction, and I said I'm going to work it into the show today.
Yeah, I saw it last night on Twitter. I'm like, I don't even get this joke. What is this?
Oh, boy. Well, you telling me you didn't get it would have helped before I wrote it in the script last night. Thanks for the response.
But you got a win from Bogues. And then
thank you.
Finally, why did you write in pretend nothing was wrong? What was that reference to?
I got to find this in my script. I don't even know what you're talking
about. It was after Kucherov's injury. They pretended nothing was wrong.
Because in other words, they just lost their best player, and they still jumped out to a 2-0 lead. That's all it was saying.
So that wasn't a pun.
No, that wasn't a pun. That was just trying to tell the story of the game and trying to rebound off my Coochie Coochie Coo to
pretending
get us back on track.
Pretending nothing was wrong. Okay. All right. Well, then all told, I mean, this was probably – what?
The best one I thought you were going to like. You don't even comment on?
The horse manure?
No. After the game, Bo knows he wanted to send the Islanders fans home happy.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
That's in your wheelhouse of Bo Jackson.
It is, but...
That was for you. That was for you.
All right, I mean, it was fine. To me, it was hitting one of two from the free throw line. It's almost like, why even bother mentioning it? It's a Bo knows reference.
Yes, his name is Beauvillier. I gave you a Bo Jackson in your wheelhouse of your high and mighty growing up sports times, and you stiffed me on a, hey, I really like that, Merez. That was actually a birthday gift for you. We didn't get to celebrate last week, and I come out Thursday, and I say, you know what? He went short and sweet with the jokes. Don't write the jokes before you write the script. I totally changed the way I approached Canadian bacon today, and I came up with Bo Nose on the fly as I'm typing to say, this is DA's birthday present. And then you insult me and rip through six puns and don't even mention it?
Well, I appreciate the sentiment if this really was done for me. I very much was. I love Bo Jackson, so I appreciate you knowing how much I love Bo Jackson. I guess I just needed a little bit more meat on the bone with the reference, like Bo Knows post-game, and then maybe reference to like snapping a bat over his knee or trucking through Brian Bosworth or something.
No, because when I do that and I over-reference, you crush me for over-referencing. You say short and sweet. I give you a short and sweet Bo Jackson reference, and you basically shove your thumb up my new year. You know what? I mean, what are you doing?
Okay, all right.
I'm sticking to what you want. Come on.
Well, I'm telling you, this was your best Canadian bacon.
Thank you.
I thought that the Bo Nose wasn't notable enough to bring up, but maybe I'm wrong on this. Bogues, was this a great pun by Merez?
No, I think I agree with you on that it didn't stand out where it needed to be lauded on its own. Like, it was good. It was fine. It was somewhat obvious off of Beauvillier. And it happened, but it wasn't debatable. It was there. It was good. It was fine. But it wasn't like, did we like it? Did we not like it? It was there.
That's fine. But then don't double down on the insult when I bring up not mention the best one. Then you go, oh, what, the horse manure line? Like you doubled down and skipped over the Bo Nose line.
Eli doesn't like it either.
I try to do something nice for everybody. I can't win.
Well, this was, I think, your best of the postseason. Bogues, would you agree?
I would, and normally you like to tell us that it's going to be your best one and how good it was. And this one, there was no real advance warning, and I thought, yeah, all things considered, this was your best one. Maybe there had been singular better jokes in other places, but there were no lows in this one at all, and it was consistent and it was good.
Yes.
All
right. That's exactly
right. So I should
stick
with this writing style? Is that what you guys think I should do?
I think so. I think this is working for you. Pete, do you think that the Bo Nose reference deserves more credit?
No, I think it got enough credit when it was said.
Okay.
It didn't need to be on a pedestal.
Yeah, right. So, okay, so we all agree. We're all in consensus.
But I thought it was his best one.
Timeout. I'm not asking for a pedestal. Just a little bit of an acknowledgement.
Relax.
I mean, we're going through
you're
every...
saying it's your best one.
All right.
Come on. Take the credit and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. We all three of us are saying it's your best Canadian bacon, and yet you are still angry we're not more complimentary.
When you put it like that, you make me look like a selfish jerk. I get it, but it's fine. You're right. I'm just going to need to cool down next break. I'll be okay.
Now, let's also tackle this. Making fun of the Islanders, closing down Nassau Coliseum, Rangers wins are your favorite memories of Nassau Coliseum. Bogues, I found this highly unnecessary from him last night. Looking to troll the Islanders fans and ending up egg on his face with the Islanders winning in overtime. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, at least wait until they lose to be annoying and a jerk. Like, you can't do it beforehand. And the bigger picture is this all stems back to you, like, thinking that you're above all of this and, like, better than all of this, like, taking shots at Schwartz and whomever else when you're the exact same person, just in a different mode and a method. Like, you get mad at me for liking Dave Matthews. You were mad last week at people who like to watch the Olympics. But you do all these insane things that no one else likes to do. I mean, you think your flag football league is a mini version of the NFL. That's okay.
It is.
But then nothing else that anybody else likes is okay. So, like, again, it's just about, like, knowing your role, at least picking a better time to be a pig.
Also, yesterday, Upside Down Mike tweeted like a pregame game six. I'm kind of nervous, but I'm extremely ready. I can't wait for game six. And Merez retweeted this and said, season's over. And then last night said, this is the closing of Nassau Coliseum. Sad to see it close forever tonight. It's not closing forever. Even had the Islanders lost, even if the Lightning win game seven, the Isles go home. They just put how many hundreds of millions, at least tens of millions of dollars into the renovation. It's going to stay open for concerts now. It's a concert venue for the rest of time. I mean, Elton John's going there in March. So how can you say it's closing forever tonight?
You're absolutely right on a factual level, but Bogus could tell you living on Long Island, this Islanders run is treating it like it is closing forever. It really is. Nobody cares. And I have boots on the ground. One of my ushers there, who happens to be a family member, has told me there's already rumblings about closing it next year because they're going to lose all the concerts to Belmont after dumping all the money into it.
Is that possible? Or are they going bankrupt because they gave the Schwartz family too many free Disney on ice tickets?
And look, I'm the Schwartz beat reporter. If I don't see Schwartz tweet Michael Bublé tickets, as far as I'm concerned, there's not an event at Nassau Coliseum that he's not at.
Or the boat show?
And by the way, I'm still could be right. Well, not right factually. They lose game seven. It's the last Islander game there.
Well, that's a little different than you tweeting season's over.
I forgot about that one.
Nassau Coliseum closes forever tonight.
Point, point.
To be fair, I forgot about the Ruick, the upside down Mike tweet.
Point. Point.
Mac and Bear tweets, good morning, guys. The coochie coo reference I thought was a throwback to Charo. I got that pun. Oh, man, I'm dating myself. But a good Canadian bacon from Mraz.
Let's get stunned.
Woo-hoo!
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
We are still fighting over the composition of tuna at Subway. We did this story months ago when two people filed a class action lawsuit against the company saying its tuna sandwich contained no tuna at all. Mm-hmm. Now we have a fresh report from the New York Times. The samples it sent to an unnamed lab contained no detectable tuna DNA. The lab says it is possible the tuna is so processed that there's nothing left for its tests to pick up. Subway, of course, stands by its tuna, saying it is skipjack and yellowfin tuna. Lisa Guerrero of Monday Night Football's Past did a report for Inside Edition over the winter, and their Subway samples did contain some actual tuna. And the plaintiffs in that original lawsuit have backed off their first claims a little bit. The suit now amended to challenge Subway's claim of, quote, 100% sustainably caught skipjack and yellowfin tuna. I think this was my advice back with the original story. Get something other than tuna at any of these places. If you want tuna, go to the store and buy a can, get some mayo, maybe some celery, some relish, and make it yourself, or go to an actual deli. But no matter tuna or not, it's just not a thing you should be getting from a fast food place.
It is true. Fast food fish is always taking your life in your own hands unless it's deep fried, and even then you might want worry about it. But here's the thing. If they are advertising it as tuna, it really should be tuna. They could call it a fish sandwich. They could call it fish on wheat or whatever. But they shouldn't call it tuna if it's not tuna. Now, we actually have a Subway sandwich artist that happens to be employed by CBS Sports Radio and the DA show. From a New York Times article, they purchased 5 different footlongs, or perhaps they purchased 10 different 6-inchers of tuna. But either way, they went to multiple locations, got the tuna, then sent it to a lab for testing. And in these cases, they could not verify, the scientists could not verify that it was actually tuna. They said either it was so processed, there's no identifiable fish that you can bring out of it, or it wasn't tuna. Which brings the question, is it fish? Okay, so let me read to you a quote from a sandwich artist in this Times article. This is from a sandwich artist, actually manager in California, named Sage. She's been a Subway manager for 3 years. The tuna comes in a case, and inside the case there are 6 aluminum pouches, and it's just like a pressed vacuum-sealed slab of tuna. It's flaky and clearly soaked in water. It's like a brine, so it's just soaked in salt water, and it's just flaky tuna. We just spread it apart with our hands and then mix it with mayo. She said it has basically a 3-day counter life, about 72 hours, in which case we all agree, quote, all of us that work there, it gets kind of gross. Now, she believed that it is tuna because it wouldn't make sense to mislabel it because tuna is so cheap anyway. But Jen, a former Subway sandwich artist who worked at a Subway in Iowa last year, said that there's no incentive to replace the tuna with anything else. She said, I dealt with tuna all of the time. The ingredients are right on the package. Tuna is relatively cheap meat. There's no point in making a replacement to tuna to make it cheaper. And I personally know that I've got a really weak stomach to fish, which is how we know the tuna is real. The last time I ate it, I puked my guts out. So here is a sandwich artist saying, I know it's tuna because I ate our sandwich and I puked from it. If that's not a ringing endorsement of eating the tuna at Subway, I don't know what is. Mraz, you have been there, done that. Do these stories match up with your experience?
Absolutely, and she's so right about the aluminum pouches. And, D.A., I am on record several times on the D.A. show of telling everybody I don't eat tuna fish because of the year's hard time I spent as a sandwich artist. The way you have to break it up, the smell of that brine, the glooping of the mayo when it hits. Basically, it's a half pouch of mayo for one pouch of tuna, two pouches, obviously, of tuna for one pouch of mayo. It gloops in there, and you have to break apart the tuna, and you just, oh, and then you get the ice cream scooper, and it's, you know, you got to put the scoops on there. Nothing ever smells right, but I can tell you, because I questioned myself how grossed out I was by the tuna in all my years, everybody knew when I walked in that was the job I least wanted to do was be on tuna prep. I would rather chop every vegetable in the world overdoing it, but sometimes you just have to do it when I was a manager and high up in that kind of chain of restaurant. Here's the deal. They go through tuna bids. It's kind of like the combine being through the bidding war. The meats, the vegetables, they all will come in you know, the Subway disguised boxes, but in the fine print, you see the real company that has won the bid to win that. And a lot of times the tuna comes from the same companies on the same cans you're grabbing off the shelves at themselves, but you're never going to question the tuna you're making at home that you bought at the supermarket. You're, of course, going to question the tuna that tastes a little funky because it's probably left out on the line a couple days too long, and then you're going to find there's no DNA. This, to me, I think is a scandal that is ready to blow the lid off anything. If there is no DNA in Subway tuna that shows you it's tuna, you will soon find out that same tuna you're buying from those reputable brands in the supermarket, I have a feeling you may not find tuna DNA in those as well, because it's all coming from the same place, the same cheap tuna. I promise you that. There is about to be a big tuna scandal in this country.
Okay, so you're saying it's absolutely fish that we're eating at Subway's, but it's probably not tuna. It's probably a different fish mislabeled as tuna that a star-kissed or a chicken of the sea. Correct. Also mislabels.
Right. Now, everybody's saying tuna's cheap, cheap, cheap. I'm sure there's probably another fish even cheaper. The point is, maybe there's some tuna mixed in with some other parts of a fish. You know, how a hash brown's mixed in bad cuts of a potato, something like that. I'm not a tuna expert. I'm not pretending to be a tuna expert. What I am telling you is the tuna at Subway is no different than the cans of tuna you buy in the store. So if this is where they're getting the bad rep, and it's getting tested, I'm telling you right now, don't assume this is just on the sandwich industry. It's in the supermarket industry as well, in these big companies. There's a tuna scandal going on in this country.
But you're convinced it is fish.
It has to be. It smells like fish. Unless they somehow have like a potpourri version of fish smell they put on there. I mean, there's no mistaking that smell. When that, as they put that vacuum seed foil pouch and the brine comes out, I mean, if that's not fish, I don't know what fish is.
But it could be like a particle board of fish where they've taken all these fish parts from all these types of fishes, cheap fishes, parts of fishes, ground them all up and made them into like one slab and then sent it to you guys. And you have to like overcompensate with tons of mayo.
Yes. And by the way, this isn't the first time that Subway has gotten in hot water with this. I could tell you because this happened during my era of working there. There was a crab meat sub as well, less popular than the tuna. And a similar kind of problem arose where people questioned the crab meat. Subway was forced to change the name on the menu from crab meat to seafood salad because, as it turns out, we all know what crab meat tastes like, and it wasn't real crab meat. It was some kind of artificial combination of seafood stuff. So this is not the first time in the sea that Subway's been backed into a corner. I lived it the first time with crab meat becoming seafood salad, and you wonder the fallout here from the tuna fish.
I actually really like tuna fish sandwiches, but only when I make them. I cannot go anywhere and trust the tuna there, even at really nice restaurants. Well, no really nice restaurant has a tuna fish sandwich. But, you know, sometimes you go out and, like, a really good burger place will have, like, you know, what, seafood place. And I'm just like, nah, I'll make my own tuna fish sandwich. Bogues, are you a tuna guy?
Love tuna, and I guess I'm more dangerous than you because delis, diners, I mean, if I can see it and look at it and it's, you know, passes the eye check, then I'm going to eat it. So, but never Subway, Blimpies, Quiznos like that. And like, you buried the lead to a certain extent in here. You, the whatever quote you read that I saw too, that this thing has a 72-hour shelf life.
Yeah.
That's disgusting. No meat slash mayo combination should be out in the open air for 3 days and given to other humans. So that's a problem in and of itself. Whether it's tuna or not, it shouldn't last that long. That's why I would never eat that.
The Bucks have a secret weapon in Chris Middleton, and whether they should unleash Chris Middleton on the unsuspecting Atlanta Hawks. And so Pete's going to cue the music, the theme from Milwaukee-based Happy Days. Here is Aiden, the Milwaukee and Marquette Marvel, on the ground last night before Game 1.
CBS Sports Radio.
No way, you know the jingle? All right, right up to here, actually.
This will be used on the radio. You ready to answer a few questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right.
Lucky man. You lucky, dog. You lucky I can't do a one-on-one with you, man.
Should Chris Middleton unpipe it in Game 1?
Should he what?
Should he unpipe it?
What's that?
You know, like when you unpipe it, you need cold water after. There's disciplines involved.
What? I don't know what that is, boss.
Should Chris Middleton unpipe it in Game 1?
Yes. Oh, you were going to get me.
You know when you need, like, cold water, you want to unpipe it first game of the series?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Unpipe it, whatever. Unpipe whatever. Bucks and folk.
What would you tell the ESPN folks that call Milwaukee a terrible city?
I say go on down to Vagabond, where they renamed their dog, the Milwaukee dog, to the Terrible City Dog. It's not a terrible city.
Milwaukee is the best city on earth, and I love it here.
Stephen A. is not a good person, and neither is Max Kellerman. Their first takes are terrible takes.
First take is terrible.
You can't beat Wisconsin, you can't beat Milwaukee, you can't beat Milwaukee's people.
Well, I watch Undisputed, so forget first take.
Molly said it was a terrible city. I don't think Molly's a good host.
Last one. Should Chris Middleton unpipe it in Game 1?
Should he what?
Unpipe it.
Unpipe it? What does that mean?
You know, like when unpipe it, you need cold water.
You need cold, like, he's good though, right? What do you mean? Wait, hold on. What do you mean unpipe it?
Unpipe it Game 1. I don't think it matters.
Should Chris Middleton unpipe it?
What?
Should Chris Middleton unpipe it in Game 1?
Unpipe it?
After Game 1.
Unpipe it.
What's that? You know, like, unpipe it.
Oh, Chris Middleton, he's unpiping warm-ups from every single quarter from there on. I bet $40 on him hitting over 24 points. He's got to get me through.
Should Chris Middleton unpipe it in Game 1?
Chris Middleton,
what? Unpipe it?
Yeah, absolutely. Let it fly, man.
Should Chris Middleton unpipe it in Game 1? Yeah, I guess. What does that mean again? Nice job, Aiden.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
Who is the king of the Animal Kingdom, at least higher in the Animal Kingdom, in this Eastern Conference Finals? Is it the Hawks or the Bucks? Birds or deer? Surprisingly, 72% of you said it's Hawks. The Hawks higher in the Animal Kingdom than the Bucks. Now, there are 200 species of hawks worldwide, and the lifespan of a hawk is between 10 and 20 years. Male deer are the ones called bucks. Bucks are the only deer that grow antlers. Interesting. Did you know that members of Pete the Body's family have had bad animal experiences with seagulls? The Body had his hot dog taken to the beach when he was a kid. Mrs. Body had her panini stolen in college by an annoying bird, and his aunt got hit in the eye with a cork propelled by a seagull. That's advanced analytics. Here is upside down Mike's celebration from last night's overtime win by the Islanders.
Gosh, we're having a good time. We've never been this close. Game 7 in your building. You think we're dead? Ain't happening. Scott Mayfield. Bo Philly A. We are one game away from the Stanley Cup. You don't know what this means. You don't. You want to make fun? Fine. I don't give a shit. This is my Super Bowl. This is my World Series. This is something that means more to me because of this logo that I wear on my chest every damn week in and out. I love it. One game. Guess what? We ain't dead yet. Give it your all. Play with tenacity. Play with heart. Play Islanders brand of hockey. Let's go, Islanders!
Oh, that's an elite video. That's an elite effort from Upside Down Mike. On the verge of tears last night. I need to pick that apart Zabruder film style tomorrow morning on the show. For now, it's your epic fail, which I guess is all the noises in the back of Mraz's house as we broadcast during our home days, home offices.
Yeah, the fail is my knees completely being cut off by DA this morning on the show.
Here it
and
is.
My heart, my stomach.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Eradicating. Wow, that's an animal bark. That's a very loud Eli bark. Wow, okay. That's Eli basically in Mraz's lap barking during this tape. Mraz, we got to get back to the studio here because
I'm
you just
dying.
Can't be trusted. We don't have like Dan the ice cream man that's going to drop by and let you know what schedule he's on and when he's going to come by to give you your creamsicle later on today.
That's Eddie, and it'll be at 9 p.m.
Do I have to worry about you laughing and half of a phlegm, half of a Jody Mac lung coming up?
Absolutely not. No more laughs.
How you doing? You ticklish today? Ooh, how you doing?
I feel skewered, and I am sorry to everybody.
I mean, it's just relentless. It's just relentless. Like other nationally syndicated radio shows, that's an animal book. That's a very loud Eli bark. Don't have one member that is just kind of a never-ending circus where we have to just kind of work around the absurdity every single day.
My man, I like the cut of your jib.
Like, it's let's just make sure that the show fits around Mraz's insane life. Let's just make sure that there, for this segment, there's no toddlers on laps grabbing the microphone. That's an Eli bark. That's a very loud Eli bark. Let's just make sure this segment doesn't happen to be like a family member that barges into the scene and just hijacks the set. Let's just make sure it's not like dog barking. Once, 15 months, once Rosie the cat came on this desk and once there was the gardener doing the lawn at Bogus's house. Once!
You know what? Do me a favor. Say it one more time. I dare you.
That's an Eli bark. That's a very loud Eli bark. Those are one-time things. And for you, Mraz, every day there's something. Every hour there's something.
I'm defeated.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
We got to get back from studio. There's just, it's too much friendly fire going on. The streets are so hot right now. Mraz has barking and toddlers, and I'm getting all cranky. Apparently, Boomer Esiason ripped me today for having a parking spot at the garage at work. So we're going to play that audio for you tomorrow. Cap is in like 13 different places, like the Virgin Islands doing the TriCaster right now. We got to get back into the studio, guys. We have to focus here. We are losing our edge. Everything is falling apart on us, Mraz.
We will be better for it and stronger for it, and we will come together as a show, and no more dogs barking, no more arguing over parking. Let's go. We return soon.
Bogues, we have to come back. We have to. It's the only way for us to get our groove back.
If you say so, boss. I like where I am, lawnmowers or not, but if you say so.
Spineless Bokish.
I mean, I got Boomer coming after me now. We got
Got a parking spot. How does Boomer have one? You don't have one. I mean, how does Boomer not, but you do? That's not fair.
No, good he's agent. Got one. Well, you're telling me that the most important character in New
York. I've seen the Boomer pick up on the street.
Yeah, I've seen him pay the meter.
I've paid the meter for him, actually.
Yeah.
Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Pete the Body Bellotti on the wheels of steel. Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA, and Andrew Bogish on your headlines. I'm DA. The mothership disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.